Mass extinction, resource depletion, climate change and food crisis. These are just a few of the challenges that face us, according to Julian Cribb's new book, Surviving the 21st Century. It investigates humanity's 10 greatest challenges and how to overcome them. The book begins by suggesting the term Homo sapien is no longer appropriate to describe our species. I spoke to Julian and he explained why.
That was a term coined by the Swedish scientist Linnaeus in the 18th century. Wise man is what it means. I don't think you could possibly describe the human race as wise or even remotely intelligent, actually, because wisdom is the ability to take all the facts that are around you and to look into the future and understand what is going to unfold and then take corrective action if you need to take corrective action or to take action to develop opportunities. So wisdom is that ability to look into the future, and individual humans have certainly got wisdom. But collectively, we don't. We're very resistant to asking ourselves, what is our future going to be like?
In terms of the classification of humans, what alternative would you suggest?
Well, I would suggest that there be a worldwide conversation about it. I don't want to put forward a name myself, but I think it's about time that we humans looked ourselves squarely in the eye and understand that if we allow these 10 megatrends to dictate our future, it's going to be a pretty horrible future. It's going to probably take out a very large proportion of the planet, if not most of civilization. Action now, however, can avert that and can ensure it is a much more pleasant future.
What does the future look like to you if these things aren't addressed?
Well, pretty grim. I mean, this is not me speaking, it's the various scientists who've looked at this, but anywhere between 5 and 10 billion people dead, which is between 50% and 90% of the human race. I mean, this depends on whether you assume that things get so bad that people start chucking nuclear bombs around. We can't predict that. We don't know what's going to happen. But we do know that we're destroying the planet in various ways, that we're living way beyond the max on our credit card, as it were, that we're destroying the climate, we're destroying the soil, we're using up the water far faster than we should, we're running out of fish, you know, we're running out of a whole lot of things that we need to support ourselves. Now, again, there are simple technical solutions which we can all implement to solve this, but only if we realise what the situation is.
One of the chapters looks at the hugely accelerated rates of extinction around the world, and there are pretty frightening figures about that you cite. We often only hear about extinction from time to time when it's, say, like a rhino or, as you say in the book, the Galapagos tortoise. How can we bring this issue of extinction into the public consciousness?
What we have to understand is that when you lose large numbers of species, you actually simplify the environment in which you're living. I mean, a heavily polluted river in which all the fish and the plants have died is an example of a simple environment, right? Now, we don't want the whole planet to become like that, but that is what we're gradually turning it into, a nasty, polluted place where very few living organisms can actually survive in the long run. It is quite possible to reverse this process. That's my point. For example, the most destructive thing that we do in terms of other species is eat. Most of the species that die out worldwide die out as a result of the huge changes, you know, the number of forests we knock down to grow our food, the degradation of the grasslands, the degradation of the farmlands, and so on. The destruction of all of these environments. The problem is we humans need an environment in which to live and to thrive, an environment with clean air, clean water, and good food in it. And if we destroy all those things, we're not going to have them for ourselves. So it's not just for the other species. It's a question of how habitable the Earth is going to be by the time we've finished with it. The simple solution to this, actually, is to stop growing food on farms, or at least half of it, move food back into the cities, and pay farmers to look after and restore the original forests and landscapes and grasslands that existed in the past.
It's clear that many of these concerns in the book, the 10 things, that they all seem to kind of intersect with each other in different ways. How does this need to be taken into account when searching for solutions? Because you do offer a number of solutions in the book.
For example, if you take the typical solution to food insecurity, most people say, oh, all we need is more tractors, more chemicals, and more fossil fuels. But the trouble with a solution like that is, if you burn more fossil fuels, you make the climate much less reliable for agriculture. So you get more drought and more floods and things like that. So that's not a solution. What we have to do is look for solutions that cut across all 10 of these issues. They don't make matters worse in some other area if we solve that particular problem. So it's just a case of being intelligent in our choice of solutions and picking the ones that do the least harm or do the most good.
It's pretty easy as a person to feel like the planet's future is a bit out of our hands. And included in the book are some pretty shocking figures about an individual's consumption of resources and how that impacts on the planet. What can be done at an individual level?
First of all, we need to stop making things anew and recycling. We need to recycle everything. Water, metals, timber, everything that's in our daily lives needs to be reused ever and ever. Then we will never run out. Okay? If we recycle all our timber, all our building materials, all our metals and things like that, then we're not going to run out. So we need what they call a circular economy. And there's lots and lots of jobs in that, and there's lots of opportunities. So that sort of thing has got to come in worldwide. Individuals have a very big stake in all of this. We can control, as individuals, what companies do and what governments do. We can control companies through how we spend our dollar. We can control what governments do through how we vote in elections. And we can change those things. We can change them dramatically. The point is that people are linking up at light speed around the planet for the first time now. We are forming, if you like, an Earth-sized mind. We're starting to discuss our problems in a generalized conversation across the whole of the human race. This is a very exciting moment in human history. For the first time, we're actually sitting down and talking about things and what we should do about them. We have the capacity there both to understand our problems, share the information, and share the solutions.
Julian Cribb, speaking to me earlier about his book, Surviving the 21st Century, Humanity's 10 Great Challenges and How We Can Overcome Them, which is published by Springer International.